Hello and welcome to The Good Robot Andy's Season 11, Episode 9. My name is Andy Bainham and this is...
Andy Cockerill.
And the thing we're going to talk about this evening is...
Sorry, I'm laughing at my stupidness. We're going to talk about a TV show called The Artful Dodger.
The Artful Dodger, which immediately yes. Sounds like a costume drama, and so I've fallen asleep.
Okay, so it does feature costumes,
mm-hmm.
and it is a period setting,
mm-hmm.
and it does have dramatic stuff in it, but it's quite it's quite light and fluffy as well, mm-hmm. and funny in places.
Is it based on the Dickens books?
Yes. Book. It's based on some characters from Oliver Twist.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But therein, really, that's really where the thing ends in terms of...
Okay.
That's a jumping-off point okay. for what's happening in this. So this can be found on Disney Plus
okay.
in the UK. It is an Australian television series produced by Sony Pictures Television for the streaming service Disney Plus.
So hold on, are they all Australian?
There's a lot of it's set in Australia.
Okay, okay.
Yes, set in Australia.
That's minutely less boring then.
Exactly, yeah, it's an interesting location because it's sunny pretty much all the time. It's a sequel to the Dickens novel Oliver Twist from 1838. Wow. It features Thomas Brodie Sangster as the eponymous Artful Dodger, David Thewlis as Fagin.
Hang on, I've heard of him. You've talked about him before.
He's been in so much stuff, David Thewlis. Right. So I think if you've seen the Harry Potter movies,
uh-huh.
I think if you've seen what I consider to be the best or one of the best Harry Potter movies, Prisoner of Azkaban.
What number is that?
3.
I might have seen
one
that.
One with Gary Oldman.
I'm pretty sure I've seen Gary Oldman.
Okay, so David Thewlis plays Professor Lupin in that, who is...
Okay.
Can I spoil it? He's a werewolf.
He's in the name,
I've
people.
Just spoiled it. I've just spoiled it, yes. It's not very subtle, is it? So he plays Professor Lupin, but he's been in so much stuff, David Thewlis.
Okay.
And he's one of these guys who, when he turns up in something, you know it's going to be interesting because he's very skilled. And so he plays Fagin.
Mm-hmm.
Who we found out his first name is Norbert.
Okay. So hang on.
Which I'm not sure
so,
is... Yeah, go on.
So,
yeah.
So from the book, Fagin is like an evil person who like uses children as like slave labor.
Yes. Yes.
And the Artful Dodger was he like his lieutenant type thing or something? I don't know.
Yes, exactly that. Okay, yes. Okay. Basically child labor stealing stuff off rich people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he was selling it to Bill Sykes in the book.
Okay.
Played with a great deal of villainous relish by Oliver Reed in the musical film.
Villainous relish.
Relish. Venomous, yes.
Villainous relish.
Villainous relish. So the 8-part series was created by James McNamara, David Mayer, and David Taylor, and directed and produced by Jeffrey Walker, also directing are Corey Chen and Gracie Otto. So it's set in 1850s Australia. Jack Dawkins, who is the Artful Dodger, that's his actual name. I don't know whether that's a name that they've conjured up for this or whether that's from the original book.
It's from the book.
He's a former Royal Navy surgeon. So he established himself as a respected young doctor. However, an old acquaintance, Fagin, resurfaces, forcing Jack, who we know as was once a London-based pickpocket known as the Artful Dodger, back into a life of crime. There's definitely an element of the Godfather 3 about this, in which Al Pacino famously says, "Just when I think I'm out, they pull me back in."
So hold on.
It's that kind of feel.
So who's the Navy doctor?
The Artful Dodger.
Oh, he is actually the Artful Dodger. He somehow got out of child crime.
He's got good hands. You know, he's got good hands. He used to be a pickpocket.
He got out
so
of
the
crime
story is that he's
Navy.
Reinvented himself
right.
as people did reinvent themselves in the colonies if they were sent there.
Right, right, right.
But he managed to get aboard a Royal Navy ship and prove himself as a surgeon.
Okay.
So he's in Australia. He's setting himself up as a doctor, and surgery is in its infancy. They're not even... It's only been a few years since somebody used ether on the operating table. Mm-hmm. And in all other ways, they're still learning about things. So he's at the forefront of all of this stuff. But Fagin turns up. Played with...
To ruin his life.
To ruin his life, basically. He's like, my old friend, the Artful Dodger, you know, don't you remember when we used to have fun? Mm-hmm. Well, let's have some more fun. And Dodger was like, no, that's not what I do anymore. So, but basically Fagin says, well, if you don't, then I'll just tell everybody who you actually are. So he has to go along with it. And each episode essentially deals with them stealing something very expensive and nearly getting caught, and usually features some quite gruey surgery scenes as well.
So it's like a heist.
If you like that kind of thing.
It's like a heist thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I like heist
definitely
things.
It's definitely a heist thing.
Okay. I'm considerably less bored.
but along the way, Dawkins or Dodger becomes... He starts to become infatuated with the governor's daughter, who wants to be a surgeon. Obviously, women don't do that sort of thing, but in Australia, maybe you can do that sort of thing because there's nobody looking over your shoulder. The chief surgeon is an alcoholic. He's played as a falling down, quite funny alcoholic guy who doesn't really have a handle on anything. So they kind of run rings around him, and they get her in to the hospital, where she proves herself as a very adept nurse. She knows a lot about hygiene and the fact that they're getting infections that can be avoided and gets them to start putting stuff in place to help with that. He's really impressed with her, but most other people are not because they don't really understand. Fagin, on the other hand, is just, why are you spending time with this woman when we could be stealing stuff kind of thing? That's his focus. So 8 episodes... each one is just, it's like 45 minutes long. And each one, as I said, also, oh yes, the opening music for each one is a sort of jazzed up orchestral version of an Australian band's song.
Okay.
So I recognized a couple of them. Like, there's an AC/DC song at the beginning of one. And at the beginning of the penultimate episode, there's a song by INXS as well. And I was sitting there watching and thinking, I know this. What is this? And they're quite clever. You know, they're quite cleverly arranged. So they're leaning into the Australian-ness of it all.
Right.
Which is quite fun.
It sounds a bit like the Dickens version of Elementary.
I haven't seen that. You really like that, don't you?
I really like Elementary. I would highly recommend it. It's got, what's
his name? Johnny Lee Miller and Lucy Liu in New York. Is that right?
In New York.
Yeah.
In a brownstone.
No, I'm going to have to watch that because I think I'll enjoy that more than the Cumberbatch Sherlock Holmes, which I find to be quite taxing at times.
My kids love Sherlock.
Do they?
I did quite enjoy it, but it has the same grating for me that Doctor Who has. I know it shares some writing writers.
It does. It shares producers as well, Stephen Moffat.
Yeah. But I found it much less annoying than Doctor Who, don't get me wrong. But it was always a little bit like, it is actually a kid's show that I'm watching.
I know what you mean. Yeah. I know what you mean.
Whereas Elementary is very silly, but it doesn't feel like a kid's show.
Yeah.
Okay. I really like Johnny Lee Miller. Did I tell you I went to see a play with Johnny Lee Miller in?
No, you didn't. Was it good? What was it?
It was called this. No, it's called A Mirror.
Okay.
And Johnny Lee Miller was really good. The production was really good. The cellist was absolutely brilliant. Live cellist.
Wow. Well, a live cellist. Okay.
Yep. But I did not get on with the play.
Right. Okay. Where did you go to see this? Somewhere in London.
Yeah. What's the theatre called? There was a theatre in London.
There's a lot of them.
I mean, it got me out of the house. I was very pleased to be there.
When was this?
Recently. We're talking in May 2024. Okay. It must have been...
And what's it called?
It's called A Mirror.
A Mirror. Okay. Let's see where it's playing. The Almeida.
No.
No? Oh.
Don't think so.
The Trafalgar Theatre?
Yeah, Trafalgar Theatre. Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, lots of things to like about it. I don't want to be mean. So, just lots of things to like about it. I didn't like all of it.
But he was good?
Yeah, he's great. Yeah. He's very charismatic. And yeah, actually, several other actors were really good. No complaints about the acting.
Okay. But it didn't quite stick it for you, by the sounds of it.
Didn't get on with the play, basically.
No, okay. Yeah, fair enough. I'm just going to go through a quick synopsis, a very short synopsis of each episode, mm-hmm. talk about what happens in them. So in the first one, we find Jack Dawkins in Australia. He's establishing himself as a young surgeon. Fagin turns up. However, Dawkins has a massive gambling debt and a couple of ne'er-do-wells who are after him, who are saying, so if you don't pay up...
This is why he can't just turn the...
Yeah, exactly, back. Yes. If you don't pay up, we're going to cut your hands off.
Right.
He's like, obviously he needs his hands.
I need my hands, yeah.
So Fagin's like, well, you know, we can probably do something about the whole having the hands cut off thing. So he avoids that. And then, of course, he's in Fagin's debt because Fagin got him out of a tight spot. So he has to keep on thieving.
Yep. We're in a tight spot.
We're in a tight spot. So adding to his stress, the governor's daughter, Lady Belfox. Yes, please do. She wants him to train her to become the colony's first female surgeon. So that's the first episode. Quite a lot happens in that episode.
It often is the case that a lot happens in the first episode.
I think that I've got a theory about that. And that is that producers are always terrified that a show's going to get cancelled.
Mm-hmm.
So they pack loads of stuff into the first few episodes in the hope that they'll get most of their cast and in the show. And then you'll probably find mid-period of a season that things start to slow down a bit.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you just want the audience to see the major bits so they know what's coming.
Yeah. All the major players, the plot points.
It's only an extremely brave series, like the one we talked about not long ago, Fleischman is in Trouble.
That's an incredible
all the
series.
Stuff up front, and you have to wait.
You have to wait until the penultimate episode.
To get the full picture. Yeah.
I still think about that series a lot. Yeah, me actually.
Too. It wasn't long ago that I listened back to our episode about it, so that's why it's on my mind.
Excellent.
It reminded me how good that is. Sorry, you were.
So episode two. Lady Belfox receives her first day of training, decides that the hospital needs a makeover. Fagin tries to fence a necklace, but it's too hot to handle. Nobody will touch it, so he gets a bit creative. Then, when they're trying to steal 500 sovereigns, Dodger and Fagin witness Darius, who is Darius? He is the... I'm going to have to look up what part he plays now. Anyway, he's played by Tim Minchin.
Ah. Tim Minchin.
Yeah, so Tim Minchin's in this. Let me just see who he is playing. Darius. No, where is he? He's quite a long way down the cast list. Here we go. Yeah, he's the harbour master.
Mm-hmm.
He's in quite a position of power and influence in that he can disappear things.
Right.
If they need to be disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened to all that grog? Well, you know, things disappear sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
They find him in a compromising position
mm-hmm.
and decide to blackmail him.
Mm-hmm.
And then McGregor, who is the head of surgery, he is drunk and he performs surgery on his friend, in which Jack and Belle have to step in and take over because he's so drunk.
Right.
And as I said, the surgery scenes in this are quite gruey and bloody. And I don't really like the sight of blood very much.
Right.
So, although
you're okay
I don't
with
mind,
zombies.
I think okay with zombies, although I find the bit in the first Evil Dead film where somebody gets a pencil in the ankle, even though it's stop motion and not very well done, I'm still like, no, no, thank you. So Jack, with Fagin's assistance, outwits Darius to clear his debt. So Jack's no longer in debt at the end of episode two. Right. So that thing has gone. Right. However, with suspicion from the robbery falling on Dodger and Fagin, this is episode three, Gaines, who is the captain in this town, he starts to plot to bring the duo to justice. He's not a nice man.
Okay. Okay.
He's one of these police types who will do anything to bring someone in, even if it means breaking the law.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't like Fagin at all.
No, I mean...
He doesn't know anything about him, but he doesn't like him.
Okay. Now, so is Fagin... Fagin Jewish in this? Could it be?
It's never mentioned.
Right. But that could
be
related.
He does play up... It could be related, yeah. He's certainly... In the, now I'm thinking the David Lean version of Oliver Twist, which was a long time ago, that had John Mills playing Oliver Twist. So we're talking 40s, I think, that one.
Right.
Fagin was played by Alec Guinness.
Right.
And definitely played him as Jewish.
In a sort of racist way.
Some people would say that it's an anti-Semitic racist portrayal. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that Ron Moody in the musical is less so, but it's still there,
right,
for sure. So in this, no, not really. I think that he has elements of Ron Moody's performance. He doesn't burst into song,
uh-huh.
which is good.
Relief for everyone.
It's a blessed relief. Yeah. His performance is mainly just pin sharp in terms of, you see what an intellect he has.
Mm-hmm.
He's a sharp guy, even though he's been living on the streets all his life. He's very intelligent.
Right.
And he's always got a witty riposte to come back at someone. There's one in one of the episodes when they're talking about oranges. He says to Jack, do you like oranges, Jack? And Jack says, yeah, I do, actually. He says, and Vega says, well, that's a shame because I've just eaten the last one. You know, it's that kind of sense of humour. Of like, he's constantly putting him down and kind of keeping him in his place type of thing. So yeah, episode three. So Fagin uses his instinct to find the missing money, this 500 sovereigns.
Mm-hmm.
And Belle uses her knowledge to create an antiseptic.
Nice.
Darius attempts to rope Jack into a boxing match. And Belle is delighted that Jack asks her to assist in some brain surgery, where they need to relieve pressure from someone's brain.
Mm-hmm.
And a chance of a grave robbing ends in near disaster. Yeah, this is quite funny. I mean, funny and macabre at the same time. Mm-hmm. This stuff was happening at the time, mm-hmm. I guess, with them. And, yeah, it doesn't go very well. At all. Episode four. Darius, in a fit of rage, slashes a prostitute's neck, which requires emergency surgery. That's pretty unpleasant.
Mm-hmm.
He's quite a... I think Tim Minchin's a very engaging performer. And he definitely plays this guy, Darius, with a bit of an edge to him.
Right.
Like, he's a bit of a loose cannon. Fagin reaches out to a character called Red, who's actually a native Australian guy, First Nation guy,
mm-hmm.
who did steal the payroll. Belle invites Jack to a governor's dinner, which doesn't go very well. And then...
So is this played as like he's common, but he's trying to fit in?
Also, Jack can't read.
Right. Okay, so it's very much Belle, that thing of like...
Yeah.
Okay.
Belle has to read all of the medical texts to him.
Right.
So they're in it together. He can't function properly without her.
Right.
And because the guy who is courting her, who is a surgeon, he finds out that he can't read and he just looks down his nose at Jack.
Right.
Even though Jack's a better surgeon than he is, right. He's got a better instinct for doing it than this guy has. If you couldn't read and you wanted to be a surgeon, you're pretty much sunk, aren't you, right. I think, at that time.
So all right, so we're really on his side, right? even though he's a
absolutely.
Criminal.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I mean, we know, if you know anything about the book, if you've seen the Oliver Twist movies, you know that he's portrayed in, at least in the musical version, as being a Cockney chappy. He's not particularly unpleasant, but he does recruit Oliver Twist to be a pickpocket. But that's the worst that they do, really, in that.
Yeah, and he's not the bad guy. The bad guy is Fagin, right?
Absolutely. Well, no, the bad guy is Bill Sykes. He's the real bad guy. He's the real, like, violent criminal.
Okay.
Professor McGregor, who is the head surgeon, he says he's planning to retire, meaning that his position as head surgeon is up for grabs. And, of course, Jack wants that position, but this guy finds out, this other surgeon finds out he can't read.
Seems unlikely he's going to get that position.
Unlikely, yes. Next episode, Fagin plots to swap a valuable barrel, which contains... I can't remember what it contains now. With a fake.
Uh-huh.
Sensing an opportunity, Sneed, who is the other surgeon, proposes to Bell. She says, doesn't turn him down, but says, you know, I'll think about it kind of thing, when she has no intention of going through with it. And Jack really annoys Sneed by giving a second opinion on a patient, which he is not happy about.
Right. So does she like Jack?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, I think she likes the fact that he has a past that he hasn't really told her about.
Uh-huh.
And he's really talented and he's open to new ideas.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Like the ideas about hygiene in the hospital, and he's open to her being a surgeon.
He's not a sexist as everyone else.
Yeah, all she gets from other men is, you can't do that, or go and marry someone and settle down and have children, kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
She's not really interested in any of those things. Uh-huh. She has some agency about her.
Uh-huh.
So, what happens in this episode? Oh, yes. Sneed receives a leg wound. So this is the surgeon.
Uh-huh.
And the drunken professor plans to amputate, uh-huh, but Bell gives him loads of booze that he passes out, basically.
To stop him doing the wrong thing.
And then Jack saves his leg.
Right. Twist.
So now Sneed owes him a favour because he saved the leg. So now Gaines, who's the captain, he plans to rid the colony of crime. He convinces the governor of a liquor ban. I mean, they always go well, don't they? It just means that people buy it on the black market. A raid by the Redcoats results in violence and death. It all just goes terribly badly.
Uh-huh.
Fagin hears where the liquor is being transported and sets a plan to go and steal it. But Red, who's this First Nation person, seizes the chance but gets captured. Right. And Red is a woman as well. What else happens? Gaines offers Red a deal, but she's pregnant at the time and her waters break and she must undergo emergency surgery. She refuses, but Jack convinces her. They operate and they manage to get her out of the prison with some body swapping, basically. No, some body snatching. So they replace her body with a corpse.
Right.
And they get her out of the prison on a trolley. It's all very heist-like and, like,
it sounds like quite silly. It's all coming to a head at this point.
Yeah, it is all kicking off.
If someone
they are basically
a baby,
making
you know
themselves.
You're kind of near the end.
Yes. So sensing Fagin is up to no good, he's always up to no good, Jack follows him into a warehouse where he comes face to face with his nemesis called Monks. And Fagin reveals his plan to attempt a risky gold heist. So this is the gold that belongs to the governor that they're planning to steal. And then, to add to Jack's woes, Fagin spots someone arriving at the colony that he hasn't seen for a long time. And that person is Oliver Twist. And that character makes a cameo towards the end of this show. And they refer to him as, I think, a wet lettuce and a wet blanket.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just not happy that he's there. And he is He works for what we would now call the HMRC. He works for the customs.
Right.
He's there to make sure this gold gets done with it, whatever it needs to be done to it.
Right, right, right.
Little do they know that he actually plans to steal it himself. Because he can't help but steal stuff.
Okay.
So there's like double-crossing going on.
Right.
And then Belle reveals a secret to Jack at the end of this episode. And that is that she has a... there's something wrong with one of her aorta that means she's going to die without... And the surgery to save her has never been done.
Right.
At least not in Australia,
right.
Anyway, with the rudimentary stuff that they've got there.
So Jack's going to do it?
Well, of course he's going to do it, yeah. But the Sneed, who's the person who proposed to her, he's in denial about the fact that she's got this thing.
Right.
Because he can't do anything about it.
Right.
He knows that he can't operate. He can't do anything with it. So he just says, it's not that, it's something else. She'll be fine. When he knows that she's going to die.
Right.
Because
he's mentally weak.
He is mentally weak, yeah. But he does, as with, I think, with things like this, he does come into his own in the final episode, in which Jack gets caught in Belle's room by her mother. Fagin figures out who has the gold. Oliver Twist has the gold.
Twist.
And Belle self-diagnoses aortic aneurysm. So that's what it is. But only Jack believes her. Gaines, the captain, offers Fagin a pardon if he will betray Jack. So Gaines knows that something's up with Jack, and Fagin then tells him, yeah, this is who he actually is. Fagin says, well, I'll pardon you if you give up all the information on him. And we think that is actually going to happen. But then Belle has a seizure and... she gets taken to hospital. Sneed just says, I don't know what to do. They get Jack out of where he is. I think he's either in prison or he's in like house arrest in her house. And Sneed says, I'll assist you, but you're going to have to do it because you know what you're doing. And then he does this procedure, which by today's standards is probably like a fairly standard thing, but back then, where they're dealing, where they're doing operations under ether and they've got fairly rudimentary tools, is quite an achievement. Because they basically have to pass a piece of like string underneath the aorta and lift it up and then tie something off without cutting it. Because if they cut it, it's going to kill her. Yeah. So, and then at the very end of the show, Gaines turns up to find Dawkins and Fagin, and Fagin steps aside to find Red, the First Nation person who shoots Gaines dead, who appeals to Jack to say, you can save me, you're a surgeon. And Jack's like, no, I don't want to. But then Fagin and Jack get thrown in prison.
Okay.
And that's how it ends. They're both in prison. But Fagin has stolen a lot of gold, which he has on his person, which he's using to bribe the guards. So presumably they're going to get out and carry on doing what they were doing before.
It's a romping series.
Yeah, I think there'll probably be a second season. It hasn't been announced.
Was it successful?
I think it would be a shame if there wasn't. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, did it do well?
Good. Well, critically, it did very well.
Okay.
So I'm just having a look at the reception. Guardian gave it 4 out of 5, describing it as darkly comedic and praising the editing for helping the series maintain a wild energy. Yeah, it's fast moving. It sort of takes... I'm trying to think. There was a show on... No, I can't remember what it was called now. It was an HBO show that was on the BBC. Was it called Harlots?
Yeah, that rings a bell. Stuff like, yeah. There was something called something like that.
It's very similar to that in its delivery. So although people speak in period language, the way it's shot and the way it's paced is very modern.
Right.
So, yeah, fast moving, fast editing. A plucky score and surprising story, the series is easily one of the best and most refreshing to debut on Disney Plus this year.
Right.
The FT said Thewlis steals every scene, which he does. Basically, when David Thewlis isn't in the scene, you're waiting for him to come to the next one where he can steal it. So,
it might be too silly for me, but it might be worth a go.
I don't think it will be. Mm-hmm. I don't think it will be. I think that it's not too silly. It takes the business of surgery very seriously, like life and death situations. It doesn't tread light, and people do die on the operating table. Mm-hmm. And you feel like the sense of loss when someone dies.
Right.
I think the caper stuff, the heist stuff, I think you really enjoy that.
Right. Oh, maybe I'll try.
Yeah. Because Fagin, although he's talented at this stuff, he's a bit harebrained in a way. So things go wrong quite a lot. And the cast are just fantastic.
That's good.
Yeah. It's really good.
Yeah, sounds all right.
So, yeah. Highly recommended.
And it's about, what it's about, like, in terms of the question, what it's about then is
yes.
about escaping your class thingy?
100%, yeah. So, you know, I would say that it's also talked about in the series that he escaped the hangman's noose, Dawkins.
Right.
He got away with it by bribing somebody. So he was probably going to be executed. He's basically reinvented himself.
Mm-hmm. And now he's getting dragged back in.
Nobody there. Yeah, exactly. Because I think when you're part of an organisation like that, eventually someone comes back.
Mm-hmm.
He gets dragged back in, but he seems to be having fun with it as well. I think he enjoys the thrill of the whole thing. But it is about reinvention, yeah, definitely.
Okay.
Although not for Fagin.
Right.
Fagin doesn't want to go back to London. He's enjoying it in Australia,
right.
But he is still basically the same character that he was in London.
Because
that's probably all he's ever known, is that life of crime. But it's also about female empowerment, First Nation people as well. And it's also just a rollicking good adventure. It is, in fact, a rollicking Disney adventure.
It's literally a rollicking Disney adventure.
Disney adventure, yeah. Yeah.
Indeed. I didn't do my thing of like guessing what it is from the title. It was too obvious.
No, because it's because you were unimpressed by my choice.
I was full of snark.
Full of snark. I think you should give it a go. You may not like it, but give the first episode a go.
It sounds worth a go.
It's worth a try. Yeah. It's fun.
Nice.
Do you have some any other business?
Hit me with your any other business.
Sad any other business. So actor Bernard Hill, who's probably most famous to people of a certain age, of playing a character called Yozza Hughes in Alan Bleasdale's Boys from the Black Stuff, which is a film all about unemployment and grimness during 1980s Thatcher Britain.
I've heard of it, but I don't think I've seen it.
So he's fantastic in that, Bernard Hughes.
It's about coal miners, right?
It's about unemployed people. People who are unemployed.
The black stuff is coal, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So his catchphrase in that is, "Give us a job, I'll do anything. Give us a job."
Right.
That turned into a catchphrase that was on, you know, was in the playgrounds when I was at school.
Right.
It's like everybody was saying that. And then to people of another age, he played King Theoden in Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings trilogy. In the second and third movies. And I read some tributes today from some of the cast, and Billy Boyd said that he made that text that Tolkien wrote just lift it off the page and turn it into like stuff that you could understand and bring it down to a level. And it's true, you know, he's one of the standouts in those two films. He's really great. So yeah, he died recently. Very sad. Very sad indeed. So that's my AOB.
Thank you very much. I've been watching some things.
Okay. What have you been watching?
I've been watching some films. For whatever reason, I've found myself looking for a film to watch on Netflix, and I come across a few that I did not regret watching.
Oh, cool.
So probably my favourite of the three that I've managed to watch is Emily the Criminal.
Oh, I've heard that's good. Is that Aubrey Plaza from
Parks and Recreation? Her out of Parks and Rec. The grumpy, yes, the grumpy intern out of Parks and Rec. And it took me...
She's great, yeah.
It took me about an hour of watching the film to go, oh, who is that? Oh. Who is that? And then I actually had to look it up to figure out who it was. I didn't...
Yeah.
So she's not playing the same character.
Okay.
She is brilliant. But it's about someone who, it reminds me a little bit of Falling Down. Now, it's not the same as Falling Down at all.
I do like Falling Down. Yeah.
It's not like Falling Down, but it has some things in common with Falling Down, which is,
okay,
you meet a character who's like an everyman, or an everywoman in her case. She's a like normal middle class girl who did she do a law degree? She did something like that, but she can't get a job doing that. So she's working in a place where they deliver food to offices.
Okay.
And the thing that reminds me of Falling Down is that you then discover that she has got a past, and it's not as simple as that.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But yeah, it's, I won't spoil the whole film, but she gets tempted in to credit card fraud.
Okay.
And things seriously escalate from there.
Okay, don't want to hear anything else now. That sounds really good.
She is absolutely brilliant. Like, I always thought she was really good in Parks and Rec.
But yeah, she is good.
She's been given a proper role here. And it's just exciting. It's not too long. And and you really care. And, yeah, it's really good.
Excellent.
And it doesn't feel real, but in some way it feels like emotionally real or something. So highly recommend Emily the Criminal. The next one I saw is called And Breathe Normally.
Oh, okay. I haven't heard of that.
And I was really tempted in by the title. I basically decided to watch it purely based on the title because for whatever reason, I understood it immediately to mean, I don't know if it even does, but I understood it to mean like someone is like telling you to like relax and like taking you through some kind of guided meditation or something. And then they say, at the end, they say, and breathe normally. And you think, well, how am I supposed to breathe normally? Like, I'm so stressed all the time kind of thing.
Yeah.
Just identified with it. Anyway, that is about a woman who is set in Iceland. It's got subtitles.
Mm-hmm.
And this woman who's looking after her son, and she is right on the breadline. She's about to lose her flat and everything. She's trying to protect her son from what's going on. And she gets a job at the passport control office. And very early on in that, she has an encounter with a woman who's trying to get out of the country on false papers. And again, without spoiling it, their paths end up crossing multiple times.
Mm.
And they're both desperate. And they have kind of opportunities to help each other and stuff. And it's just sort of kind of heartrending and brilliant.
That sounds good.
Incredibly bleak scenery. Pretty bleak story.
Yes. Okay. No, I'm down with that. Yeah. Yeah. I've seen The Road.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this is more real than The Road. But
yeah. Okay.
And then the one that I watched, was it last night? I watched quite recently, is called The Discovery.
Okay.
Which is an independent film. And I was looking for a sci-fi film. And I watched this, and it is a sci-fi film, but there's basically no, you know, robots or laser guns or spaceships in it at all. It's basically just looks like slightly out of date now kind of thing.
Okay.
And it's set in a world where...
In a world?
They have discovered evidence that the afterlife exists. Oh, it's causing a lot of people to decide to go there straight away, let's say. And it kind of explores all that stuff. And then they eventually find out a little bit about what does happen when you die. It feels like an independent film. It is an independent film. It feels like one. It feels like something that is trying to explore ideas. And it's got quite a sweet romance in the middle of it. And I'd say it's good. I think it's one of those films that... So sometimes independent films leave me feeling unsatisfied precisely because they don't want to give you a nice, tidy ending.
Yeah, sometimes they don't end at all. They just sort of stop.
So this has this has sort of an ending, but not satisfying enough for me. So I was left a little bit unsatisfied.
Ambiguous.
But if you're a bit more grown up than me, you might like it. but yeah, it's really good. But of those three, I'd say Emily the Criminal was I really enjoyed.
I do have that to watch, but I haven't gotten around to it yet. So I'm probably going to put that on the list to watch this weekend.
Right. Yeah. Well, you can tell me what you thought of it. Yeah. Maybe we'll do an episode.
Yeah, no, I'm really looking forward to it because I think Aubrey Plaza's great. We watched season two of The White Lotus, which is this anthology show about this fictional hotel chain called The White Lotus.
Oh, I think you mentioned it, right?
Yeah, she's in the second series of that as one of the guests.
Right.
And she's terrific. You know, she's not playing a comedic role. She's just fantastic.
Yeah, she's really good.
Yeah. Anything else?
Don't think so.
Okay. So, what have we been watching? We've been watching Ripley on Netflix.
Oh, yeah. I was meaning to watch that.
Which is excellent.
That's based...
Really excellent.
Based on the same series of books that The Talented Mr. Ripley and...
It's the same story as The Talented Mr. Ripley.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
What's the other one that I really like with...
Ripley's Game.
Yeah, with John Malkovich.
That's excellent.
That's my favourite, but yeah, anyway.
Yeah, that's really good. So this is Andrew Scott, who was in Sherlock Moriarty. He's been in lots of other stuff since then.
Yeah.
Fleabag. He was in Fleabag.
Yeah, Fleabag, so good.
As the priest.
Listen, I've watched Fleabag.
Fleabag is great. So he plays Ripley. Johnny Flynn plays Greenleaf, Dickie Greenleaf. Dakota Fanning is Marge, who's Greenleaf's partner. And it's just so good. The cinematography in it by this guy called Robert Elswit, who's worked with Paul Thomas Anderson on things like There Will Be Blood, is just incredible.
Right.
You know, you're watching it when there's nothing happening. They cut away to this beautiful shot of Italy, and you're just like, wow. That looks beautiful. It's shot in black and white.
Oh, wow.
Which is an unusual choice,
but
it does work really well, I think, because they really are composing it and shooting it for black and white rather than shooting it in colour and then transferring it to black and white.
Okay.
Andrew Scott is terrific as Ripley.
Right.
He's very different to Matt Damon's take on it and different to Malkovich's.
Right.
He's got this kind of sociopathic energy about him.
I somehow didn't enjoy the Matt Damon thing. I kind of respected
it. I don't remember a lot about it, really.
Yeah.
It looks good.
Right.
I think, but I don't remember much about it. Man, it was a long time since I've seen it.
Maybe it's just that everyone's so mean.
I've only seen it once. Yeah, I mean, everyone's mean in this, but Ripley, he plays him with... Although he's a bit of a bumbling, because when we first meet him in New York, he's a low-level crook. You know, he's...
Okay. So you get a little bit more... Because you don't really get much introduction, I think, in The Talented Mr.
No.
Ripley.
Okay. No. Okay. So what's he doing? He's phoning people up to say that they owe money on something.
Right.
And they're like, no, I don't owe any money. I paid that. And he said, well, it hasn't arrived. So can you make a check payable to blah, 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 and send it to this address, to this post office box. And basically threatens them with legal action.
Right.
But he's got nothing to do with the thing that they owe money on. So he's low-level crook, you know. He's not doing very well at it. You know, in the first episode, we see him take these checks to a bank to pay it under an assumed name. And the bank teller takes them to the manager who gets on the phone, and he, Ripley is just like, no, and just walks out of the bank. So he's lost all of those checks. Right. And then, so when he gets approached by Greenleaf Senior to say, go and find my son in Italy, he's like, yeah, that actually sounds like quite a good deal.
Right.
Yeah, it's really good.
Right.
Really, but it's very slow.
Right.
Very slow. You know, it takes its time with its storytelling.
Okay.
Which is fine when it looks as good as it does.
Right.
I think if it didn't look that great and it was a bit languid, I'd be losing patience with it.
Right.
But it's so, so good. What else have we been watching? Yes, there's another new show on Disney Plus called Renegade Nell, which is written by Sally Wainwright, who wrote Happy Valley.
Right.
And Gentleman Jack, which is another HBO BBC co-production.
Right.
So this is a show on Disney Plus about a highway woman who has a guardian, like a fairy type sprite thing.
Okay.
That gives her superpowers. So it absolutely belongs on Disney Plus. It's live action. And it works. Mm. It just works.
It's not gonna happen for me.
No, okay, it won't happen for you, but we enjoyed it.
I'm not gonna miss Disney. Me and my missus enjoyed it. At some point my son is gonna move out and stop paying for Disney Plus, and I'm not gonna miss
it. And that'll be it. Yeah. So yes, my wife described, going back to Artful Dodgers, she described it as Dickens with romance.
Okay.
Which is fair. Yeah.
Dickens can be quite depressing, so it may be.
Well, it's quite bleak, isn't it, the stuff that he
sometimes
used to write.
Well, probably Oliver Twist less so. I don't remember much about Oliver Twist, but
I think one of his less, the ones that's, one that I have gone back to a couple of times is Great Expectations.
Oh, that's awful.
Which is you don't like it? Too bleak?
Well, I only read it at school.
Too grim?
You hate everything.
Oh, okay. Yeah. What else have we been watching? I don't think we've finished anything else. We've been watching Catastrophe on Netflix, which is a Channel 4
You're late to
comedy.
The party.
I know. Yeah, very late
I haven't
to
watched
that
it.
We like a half-hour comedy that we can watch an episode of per night. So
did I mention we've been watching The Job Lot?
No.
Have you heard of it? It's on Netflix.
No, what's that about?
It's about some people who work at a job centre.
Oh, okay.
It's quite funny. It's pretty gentle.
Okay, no, gentle is good.
And then we've also been watching, I'm not going to remember what it's called.
Maybe I'll
about
know.
One. It's one about where everyone's got a superpower, but the main character hasn't.
Ah, yes, that is. It's on Disney Plus, isn't it? Or is it on BBC? I think it's on Disney Plus.
I think we might be watching it on ITV.
Phenomenon or something like that.
No, yeah, like that. It's not remarkable. It's like.
Yeah, I know the show you mean, but it's supposed to be very good. Is it good?
It's funny. It's
yeah.
Funny.
Okay.
I could see how some people would love it. I think it's okay.
Right. Yeah,
it's passing the chuckles test, as in we keep coming back to watch the next one. So.
Hmm.
Yeah. If we could remember its title, listener, then that would be useful for you to be able to find it.
The other show we watched and finished was a show with Rob Lowe. It's like a tech bro genius.
Right.
Who's having a crisis.
Oh, I think... him and his son?
Yes.
Yeah, we watched a bit of that and we gave up on it after a while.
We watched all of that and enjoyed it. Yeah,
that's quite funny. Yeah.
It's fun to see that Rob Lowe is basically playing the same character he played in Austin Powers.
Yeah, he was really good in it. And I thought it was good.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know why we
so I quite enjoyed that.
Maybe
it was fun.
A bit tiresome, maybe.
I think that's it at the moment.
Right.
We've got a lot of TV shows on the go, apart from the stuff we're already watching.
I watched quite a bit of snooker.
Oh, yeah, did you?
I really like watching snooker.
Is that finished now?
Yeah, it finished on finished yesterday, Bank Holiday Monday.
Yeah, it's very contemplative, isn't it?
Yeah, I can get really good sleep in if I'm watching snooker.
Oh, really? It puts you to sleep, does it? Yeah. Do you fall asleep in front of the TV?
Yeah,
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I watched the Formula One or the Formula E or the snooker quite happily.
You like the Formula E, don't you?
Have a little snooze. Yeah, although Formula E has gone off Channel 4 onto some pay-for service, which is surely the death.
That's terrible. Yeah, it will be. Yeah. It will go from having millions or maybe hundreds of thousands of viewers to having 10 viewers.
I can't understand what short-termist made that decision, unless, of course, Channel 4 decided it was useless and didn't even bid for it or whatever. I don't know.
Because it's all about the short-term thinking, is that they take the money from the
they'll get like a few more quid this year, and then they will just disappear into obscurity forever.
Yeah, and then it'll be back on a free channel a couple of years' time.
If they survive.
But it won't be as good. Yeah, that's terrible.
I don't know. Maybe the word is that the other Formula E is going to...
Oh, is there another one?
There's
a rival.
It was set up by one of the famous motor racing drivers. Oh, I can't remember things. Anyway, they play. It's called Formula Extreme, I think, or something like that.
Let me just have a look at that.
Electric cars in extreme environments. So it's more of
hear about this. Yes, yes.
And there's like various of the famous
Extreme E.
Yeah. Various of the famous racing drivers. I've got teams that they're competing there. Their team is competing there. So it's got like a bit of celebrity power kind of thing. It's supposed to be good. I've never watched it.
Okay. Former driver Gilles de Ferrari. Maybe that's Ferran, maybe.
I'm sure it's someone I'd heard of, but anyway. So anyway, that's supposed to be good, but I haven't watched
Extreme
it.
Extreme E sounds like a band.
Extreme E flat.
Extreme E flat. E flat minor. Not the saddest of all chords, but close. Anything to plug?
I'm making a load of videos about how to program in Rust. That's still going on.
Okay. Yeah.
You can find them. Follow me on Mastodon. Yeah, there'll be a link. There's a link on our website.
There is, yes. I don't have anything to plug, so I think that's it.
That's it then. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, listener.
See you next time.
Bye.